It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. As the devices we use on a regular basis become more advanced and more intuitive to use, they've also become easier to personalize, meaning consumers have more power over their technology. Maya Design is a consulting group that's focused on simplifying our devices and data, and Matthew Casebeer is a computer scientist for Maya Design. He joins us to talk about what open source design can mean for society. Matthew Casebeer, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks, Paul.
And if you have a comment or a question for our guest, you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is essspgh@wesa.fm. And you can reach us on Twitter at essspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Matthew, what does it mean when a device has an open source design?
Well, it depends on the device, but like Android devices out there, it's the availability for computer scientists like myself to take the code, modify it as I see fit, and then release it to the public. It really gives power to what I like to call the 1%, the people who are educated on the open source and how to code and spent years in school learning about it. At Maya, we're trying to change that instead of being for the 1%. Making it for the 99%. Everyone else. Get everyone else to the party. Let everyone else control their devices as they see fit versus, me.
Right. So how do you do that for people?
Well, one thing we've been really focusing on is a concept we call MakerSwarm. It's a authoring tool that allows you to duct tape all your digital devices together.
What's that called again?
MakerSwarm.
Okay.
It's basically allow you to have x-ray vision into the digital devices around you. So, for example, your garage door may has a vibration sensor in it. So you could look at that, see that vibration sensor, and then we'll just draw on some wires on your mobile device, attach that to your lights. So you can bring power to yourself over your devices. Instead of having to write code, we're trying to abstract it to just be making you MacGyver, basically.
So then what happens? How are you making that garage door open?
That's the magic. it's really, most of these devices, we've talked to a lot of different companies, and they have APIs for them. This is a way for us to communicate to their devices. And again, it's a really computer literate person can do it themselves already. Any engineer that's listening to this will be like, oh, I can already do that myself. Like what I said, though, I'm not trying to solve it for them. I'm trying to solve it for 99%, where it's all they see is some boxes that they can draw lines together and let my niece go ahead and do that if she wants and give her the power to play tricks on her brother and sister.
Now, how realistic is it to think that companies will want to make their technology so open?
I don't think they have a choice. I think in this day and age, everything's becoming so public. You can't hide anymore. So it's better for them to come out first and, hey, here's our data. Maybe you guys can find some way for us to use it that will make us profitable anyhow. So why don't we give it to you, see what great ideas you have, because there's more intelligent people outside your company than in your company at any time. So maybe someone will talk to PVG and get some data about the cars or something that are driving in the garage because there's a camera there and sell them that, hey, look, the paint degraded over the last 10 years. And PVG like, oh, wow, we never thought of using the garage door to detect that. So it's more them just being open to their consumers, and that will make them more popular to them.
And so the consumers can help them to design something that is then going to – that they can then turn around and increase their profit margin with.
Right.
And that's because it's more user-friendly?
Exactly, yeah. And it meets a problem that they didn't think of. So one thing that happens here is when you give the users the power to make something, they solve their problems that you would never thought of. Because what I do is I look at – when I make a new project, it's probably based on 100,000 people having this issue, not those 10 people that live on East Liberty that have that issue. So if those 10 people can go and solve that problem, there might be another 10 people out in Detroit that have the same problem. But the size of that market's so small that it's not going to be the GE solving it. It's going to be these small little knit groups that solve it. And so if you give them the power to do it, and then there's a dollar per person, and you find 100,000 of them, that's a lot of money.
We're talking with Matthew Casebeer. He's computer scientist for Maya Design about open source design and making technology more personal, making the use of it easier to personalize. And why would manufacturers, we kind of talked about this in our previous question there, but manufacturers, in terms of wanting to buy into open source technology, If there's a dollar to be made, they'll do it. But in the long run, how does this benefit companies?
It's a hard question to answer. I can see in the long run too. It becomes a shared resource. So if a manufacturer is bought into open source, they also benefit from all the advancements that other people are making. Android is a great example of this. They actually were originally an open source application, and so a lot of the stuff that they have was because the community made it, and it made their product better for the other people that just aren't part of the open source community. So it basically increases over time. They're going to have a better product because they're getting a lot more eyes on the actual problems that are in that product.
Sure. And do open source devices, do they have the potential to be more or less costly?
I think it's actually on both sides of that. It could be more costly from the standpoint of a company maintaining them because you have so many different people getting their hands involved in things. There's a lot of interaction points there because you have like hundreds and thousands of people working on it versus just that 10 people that you have control over. So it's a little more upfront organization problem. But in the long run, all the benefits they get from those 100,000 people are going to make it cheaper over time.
412-246-2002 if you'd like to join the conversation with Matthew Casebeer, computer scientist for Maya Design. We have Paul from Robinson on the line. Paul, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you very much. I'm involved with folks with a variety of, well, call them handicaps, but some of them look a lot like things that you and I will have once we get old enough. Are you or anybody you know of involved in, I'll say, simplifying some of these incredible, elegant devices so that they're more useful by folks like them and us?
I'm not directly involved with anybody doing that, but I've heard about some research being done out in Oregon around how to simplify them. And there's a company here in Pittsburgh that I can't remember their name, that really focuses on taking the tablets that we have and making them handicap accessible.
All right, Paul, thank you for that call. 412-246-2002 is the number to call. There's also the politics of the data being out there and making people comfortable with the fact that it can be utilized in a responsible way. What about that?
Privacy is a scary thing in the future, I believe.
And this comes up a lot.
Oh, yeah. One of the examples I like to say is that at CMU, they're adding sensors to one of their buildings, and they're going to have the open data and allow to share it. And they put a sensor that's for the HVAC, the air conditioning unit, in the bathroom, the women's bathroom. And it's this black box. And as soon as it showed up there, it was a hailstorm of like, why is this black box in here? Eventually, they just ended up putting labels on it, and people were fine once they understood what it was doing. So there's going to be a lot of a big learning curve on what is right and what is wrong once data is everywhere. And I think it's a lot of it's going to be experimentation. A lot of it's just going to be honest up front. If the company comes out and says, here is what I'm doing, people are going to buy into that. If they don't tell you and you discover it later, then you're going to have this evil connotation with yourself. So really, companies just need to be honest, saying, hey, here's the data we're collecting. Here's a way to get to it if you want it. And here's how we're protecting you. And that's how you have to win with it. I don't think just hiding it is going to work.
So what you're saying is we're moving away from a world where, you know, my data lives in my computer to my data lives all around me.
Yes, correct. Yeah. I believe that the cloud will even be gone eventually, and it'll just all be peer-to-peer. So the data is just always floating around you. Like, and someone could walk in their room and tend to gather it if it's not protected properly.
Right. So are the advancements well, I'll save that question. we've got Bob on the line with a comment, and he would like to join the conversation. So, Bob, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. I just wanted to make a comment about how these APIs and how the open source can be useful for companies, make them a couple of bucks. And your guest started off talking about a garage door opener. Well, my car's got a button to open my garage door, whether it's made by Sears or any of the other garage door opener companies. They settled on an API, and so now, you know, if you go to get a car, if it's not going to open your garage door, you're going to, you know, be upset about it. So companies which have different interests will feed into these things and make the make them more popular if they can fit everybody.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that. One of the things that we like to tell companies when we talk to them is that it's not about your devices talking to each other. It's about all devices talking to each other. So you don't want like my Samsung devices talk to each other. You want your Samsung devices to work with every other one's device. And that's one of the things we always try to tell them is that make sure it can talk with everything.
Okay. Bob, thank you for that call. 412-246-2002 if you want to join the conversation with Matthew Casebeer, computer scientist for Maya Design. We were talking earlier about how fast technology is moving, and it seems like one of the biggest challenges for people to keep up with is that the technological advances outweigh the ability to make information private. We were talking about that a little bit earlier. So, you know, with this society that we live in, that we're technologically advances are coming at a faster rate than we are sometimes able to deal with and manage properly. How much is going to slip through the cracks? How much is slipping through the cracks now?
Well, I mean, I have a great example of slipping through the cracks on privacy itself. Foursquare, most people know about it. It's a way to check in where you are at any time. So, you know, everyone's like, oh, this is great. I can, my friends can find me and stuff like that. Well, I think it was just a year ago. It was like robmenow.com came out, which basically looks at Foursquare, looks at how you've used it and can say, oh, he's not home from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock on Tuesdays because he's always at volleyball. Mm. And basically it shows a map of here's who's not home right now. And no one thought, like when Foursquare made it, they never thought, oh, this could be used that way, right? It's just someone out there said, oh, wait, I have all this data now. How can I use it to do – I mean that example is evil, right? So it's just a lot of it is going to fall through the cracks. It's so big that there's not enough minds out there to catch it all.
Do people have to – and it's going to be interesting because we will talk about this in our next segment with David Harris, people who are inadvertently leaving information out there about possibly a crime that they've committed. You know, people are leaving way more information out there than maybe they should. Should people start to think differently about protecting themselves a little more?
Personally, I don't want to live in fear of my data being out there. But yeah, I think every time you sign up for anything, you need to be clear on like what is it I'm doing. Even Facebook, like people put photos of themselves up there to the public and they don't realize that, oh, this is the public, which means my grandma or my boss.
Right,
yeah. Right. And I just think people don't realize that. Or maybe Facebook needs to be more upfront about it, more honest about where this data is being used. I don't want people to be scared, though, to also do it because I think the technology is wonderful and we need to embrace it. We just need to embrace it right.
And you said you don't want to live in fear. So what is it that you are – you know, what is the philosophy that you're living by with regard to all this?
I just don't do anything bad. No, I mean to me –
everybody thinks they're not doing anything that's bad, but
– true. I think my thing is more of the fact that the data is so important to me that I'm willing to risk – That it might be used for something else, and I use it responsibly. Like Foursquare and Facebook, I don't check into Foursquare till after I'm gone from that place. For example, like oh, I was there today, not that I was here at this minute. You know, or Facebook, I don't put up all the pictures. I put up the ones that are respectable. I mean, to an extent, it's just being knowledgeable about. You have this. I'll say this differently. It's what would you do in a coffee shop? Right, when there's hundreds of people around you, you're not just going to start swearing up a storm and yelling. You're going to manage your expectations to be in public. And you have to realize that the internet is the public. And as long as you act responsibly, you'll probably be fine.
That's a great point. Matthew, what is the device that you are, you know, of all these different devices that are out there, what is the one that you're just, you know, you have your newest crush on?
Well, it's the Xbox One because I just got it Friday. So
the Xbox One.
Yes, it's the new gaming system by Microsoft. A good example there about using the API is it has voice recognition. So it knows every TV infrared signal. So I can actually walk into my room, say, Xbox, turn on. And it turns on all my devices, my cable box, my TV, and all that stuff. So it's the future-ish, just not all the way.
That's very cool. Yeah. I will share – this might give away – a little more about me than I want people to know. But at the risk of that, I will tell you that I have there's that watch that there's a company that's making a watch that has, you know, all of your computer apps and music and other things, that probably the ability to play games and you know, go on the internet, surf the internet, all with your wristwatch.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Like, you know, Dick Tracy used to do, and those of us of a certain age are really enamored with stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, well, Pebble is one of those watches that you might be thinking of. It's an open source watch that has that, those features. We actually just talked to Qualcomm, who has a watch coming out. It's a little similar, but it's more the having your data be open. Is they have this shared API. It's called All Join, that anything can broadcast a signal, and the watch will pick it up and do the right thing with it. So,
oh my goodness!
Yeah. So, like, basically, he says he's at home, and he can get a message that his TV will say, "Hey, you have a phone call from Susan," because his phone sent the message out, and that TV had that same communication layer. So it was like all of his devices started getting connected at home, and his watch would say it too at the same time.
Now, the fact that you can do it on all this on a watch is seemingly cool, but at the same time, are we getting too caught up in the style over the substance here?
I think style is the way to go now. I think technology is so advanced and going so fast that the style is important because it makes it, as long as it's designed for a human, then it's important, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Just because it looks pretty doesn't mean it's good, right?
Right.
But if it looks good and it's made for a human to use it, then I think the style is important. And I mean, do you like taking your phone out of your pocket to see what time it is every day? When do you just look at your watch?
Yeah, well, I'm one of the few people I think left that still wears a watch. You know, more and more people are using, relying on their phones to learn the time.
But for you now, you can see who's calling you by looking at your watch too. And that's a little advantage.
That's true. And what's funny is, I don't know if you've seen the commercials for this, but they're showing, you know, Dick Tracy and then the Jetsons and Star Trek. You know, all of the things that people of my generation, you know, fell in love with these devices from watching, and now, you know, they're throwing it right back in our face to get us to buy it.
But we're still waiting for the flying car.
We are still waiting. That's probably coming, and then we can bring you back to talk about, you know, how to personalize all of the devices in that. Matthew Casebeer is a computer scientist for Maya Design, talking about open source and making devices, open source design and making devices more personal in our use. Matthew, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Thank you, and happy Thanksgiving to yourself.
Coming up, as people become more comfortable with sharing information on social media, are they boldly admitting to criminal activity? It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.